We are continuing Chapter 5 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and they just were led down into the dungeons, and Snape was about to give them a talking to. So he said softly, "The training isn't good enough for the famous Harry Potter and his faithful sidekick Weasley. I wanted to drive with a bang, did we, boys?" "No, sir, it was the barrier at King's Cross. It..." "Silence," said Snape coldly. "What have you done with the car?" Ron gulped. This wasn't the first time Snape had given Harry the impression of being able to read minds. But a moment later he understood as Snape unrolled today's issue of the Evening Prophet. "You were seen," he hissed, showing them the headline. "Flying Ford Anglia mystifies Muggles." He began to read aloud. "Two Muggles in London convinced they saw an old car flying over the post office tower. At noon in Norfolk, Mrs. Haley Bayliss was hanging out her washing. Mr. Angus Fleet of Peebles reported to police. 6 or 7 Muggles in all. I believe your father works in the Misuse of Muggle Artifacts office," he said, looking up at Ron and smiling still more nastily. Dear, dear, his own son. Harry felt as though he'd just been walloped in the stomach by one of the mad tree branches. If anyone found out Mr. Weasley had bewitched the car... He hadn't thought of that. "I noticed in my considerable search of the park, that considerable damage seems to have been done to a very valuable whomping willow," Snape went on. "That tree did more damage to us than we," Ron blurted out. "Silence," snapped Snape again. "Most unfortunately, you are not in my house, and on the decision to expel you does not rest with me. I shall go and fetch the people who do have that happy power. You will wait here." Harry and Ron stared at each other, white-faced. Harry didn't feel hungry anymore. He now felt extremely sick. He tried not to look at a large, slimy something suspended in green liquid on a shelf behind Snape's desk. If Snape had gone to fetch Professor McGonagall, head of Gryffindor House, they were hardly better off. She might be fairer than Snape, but she was extremely strict. 10 minutes later, Snape returned, and sure enough, it was Professor McGonagall who accompanied him. Harry had seen Professor McGonagall angry on several occasions, but either he had forgotten just how thin her mouth could go, or he had never seen her this angry before. She raised her wand the moment she entered. Harry and Ron both flinched, but she merely pointed it at the empty fireplace, where flames suddenly erupted. "Sit," she said, and they both backed into chairs by the fire. "Explain," she said, her glasses glinting ominously. Ron launched into the story, starting with the barrier at the station, refusing to let him through. "So we had no choice, Professor. We couldn't get on the train." "Why didn't you send us an owl by letter? Sorry, a letter by owl. I believe you do have an owl," Professor McGonagall said coldly to Harry. Harry gaped at her. Now she said it, that seemed the obvious thing to have done. I didn't think." "That," said Professor McGonagall, "is obvious." There was a knock on the office door, and Snape, looking now happier than ever, opened it. There stood the headmaster, Professor Dumbledore. Harry's whole body went numb. Dumbledore was looking unusually grave. He stared down his very crooked nose at them, and Harry suddenly found himself wishing he and Ron were still being beaten up by the Whomping Willow. There was a long silence. Then Dumbledore said, "Please explain why you did this." It would have been better if he had shouted. Harry hated the disappointment in his voice. For some reason, he was unable to look Dumbledore in the eyes and spoke instead to his knees. He told Dumbledore everything except that Mr. Weasley owned the bewitched car, making it sound as though he and Ron happened to find a flying car parked outside the station. He knew Dumbledore would see through this at once, but Dumbledore asked no questions about the car. When Harry had finished, he merely continued to peer at them through his spectacles. "We'll go and get our stuff," said Ron in a hopeless sort of voice. "What are you talking about, Weasley?" barked Professor McGonagall. "Well, you're expelling us, aren't you?" said Ron. Harry looked quickly at Dumbledore. "Not today, Mr. Weasley," said Dumbledore, "but I must impress upon both of you the seriousness of what you have done. I will be writing to both of your families tonight. I must warn you that if you do anything like this again, I will have no choice but to expel you." Snape looked as though Christmas had been cancelled. He cleared his throat and said, "Professor Dumbledore, these boys have flouted the decree of the restriction of underage wizardry, caused serious damage to an old and very valuable tree. Surely acts of this nature." "It will be for Professor McGonagall to decide on these boys' punishments, Severus," said Dumbledore calmly. "They are in her house and therefore her responsibility." She turned to Professor McGonagall. "I must go back to the feast, Minerva. I've got to go out to give out a few notices. Come, Severus, there's a delicious-looking custard tart I want to sample." Snape shot a look of pure venom at Harry and Ron as he allowed himself to be swept out of his office, leaving them alone with Professor McGonagall, who was still eyeing them like a wrathful eagle. "You'd better get along to the hospital wing, Weasley. You're bleeding." "Not much," said Ron, hastily wiping a cut over his eye with his sleeve. "Professor, I wanted to watch my sister being sorted." "The sorting ceremony is over," said Professor McGonagall. "Your sister is also in Gryffindor." "Oh, good," said Ron. "And speaking of Gryffindor," Professor McGonagall said abruptly. But Harry cut in. "Professor, when we took the car, term hadn't started. So Gryffindor really shouldn't have any points taken away, should it?" He finished, watching her anxiously. Professor McGonagall gave him a piercing look. He was sure she had almost smiled. Her mouth looked less thin, anyways. "I will not take any points away from Gryffindor," she said, and Harry's heart lightened considerably. "But you will both get detention." It was better than Harry had expected. As for Dumbledore's writing to the Dursleys, that was nothing. Harry knew perfectly well they'd just be disappointed that the Whomping Willow hadn't squashed him flat. Professor McGonagall raised her wand again and pointed it at Snape's desk. A large plate of sandwiches, two silver goblets, and a jug of iced pumpkin juice appeared at the top. "You will eat in here and then go straight up to your dormitory," she said. "I must also return to the feast." When the door had closed behind her, Ron let out a long, low whistle. "I thought we'd had it," he said, grabbing the sandwich. "So did I," said Harry, taking one too. "Can you believe our luck?" said Ron thickly through a mouthful of chicken and ham. "Fred and George must have flown that car 5 or 6 times and no muggle ever saw them." He swallowed and took another huge bite. "Why couldn't we get through the barrier?" Harry shrugged. "We'll have to watch our step from now on, though," he said, taking a grateful swig of pumpkin juice. "Wish we could have gone up to the feast." "She doesn't want us showing off," said Ron sagely. "Doesn't want people thinking it's clever, arriving by flying car." When they had eaten as many sandwiches as they could, the plate kept refilling itself. They rose and left the office, treading the familiar path to Gryffindor Tower. The castle was quiet. It seemed that the feast was over. They walked past muttering portraits and creaking suits of armor, and climbed narrow flights of stone stairs until at last they reached the passage where the secret entrance to Gryffindor Tower was hidden, behind an oil painting of a very fat woman in a pink silk dress. "Password," she said as they approached. Said Harry. They didn't know the New Year's password, not having met a Gryffindor prefect yet, but help came almost immediately. They heard hurrying feet behind them and turned to see Hermione dashing toward them. "There you are. Where have you been? The most ridiculous rumor. Someone said you'd been expelled for crashing a flying car." "Well, we haven't been expelled," Harry assured her. "You're not telling me you did fly here," said Hermione, almost sounding as severe as Professor McGonagall. "Skip the lecture," said Ron impatiently, "and tell us the new password." "It's Wattlebird," said Hermione impatiently. "But that's not the point." Her words were cut short, however, as the portrait of the fat lady swung open, and there was a sudden storm of clapping. It looked as though the whole of Gryffindor House was still awake, packed into the circular common room, standing on the lopsided tables and squashy armchairs, waiting for them to arrive. Arms reached through the portrait hole to pull Harry and Ron inside, leaving Hermione to scramble in after them. "Brilliant," said Lee Jordan. "Inspired. What an entrance, flying a car right into the Whomping Willow. People will be talking about that one for years." "Good for you," said a fifth year Harry had never spoken to. Someone was patting him on the back as though he'd just won a marathon. Fred and George pushed their way to the front of the crowd and said together, "Why couldn't we have come in the car, eh?" Ron was scarlet in the face, grinning embarrassedly, but Harry could see one person who didn't look happy at all. Percy was visible over the heads of some excited first years, and he seemed to be trying to get near enough to start telling them off. Harry nudged Ron in the ribs and nodded in Percy's direction. Ron got the point at once. "Got to get upstairs. A bit tired," he said. The two of them started pushing their way toward the door on the other side of the room, which led to a spiral staircase and the dormitories. "Night," Harry called back to Hermione, who was wearing a scowl just like Percy's. They managed to get to the other side of the common room, and still having their backs clapped, gained the peace of the staircase. They hurried up it right to the top and at last reached the door of their old dormitory, which now had a sign on it saying, "Second Years." They entered the familiar circular room, with its 5 4 posters hung with red velvet and high, narrow windows. Their trunks had been brought up for them and stood at the ends of their bed. Ron grinned guiltily at Harry. "I know I shouldn't have enjoyed that or anything, but..." The dormitory flew open, and in came the other second-year Gryffindor boys, Seamus Finnegan, Dean Thomas, and Neville Longbottom. "Unbelievable," beamed Seamus. "Cool," said Dean. "Amazing," said Neville, awestruck. Harry couldn't help it. He grinned, too. And that's the end of Chapter 5. And Chapter 6 is called Gilderoy Lockhart. And I hope you like that, my beautiful kitten. And I'll see you tomorrow. And sleep well and have sweet dreams. I'll see you in your pup. Good night, beautiful.